Hello, and welcome to the Green Team Party, where we discuss conservative solutions to environmental problems. I'm Zach Torby.
And I'm Katie Zakreski. Together, we'll guide you through complex issues and provide strategies to address them, all while remaining faithful to our conservative values.
Trust me, it'll be a good time.
Yeah, it's a party. So grab your mugs, and we'll pour the tea. All right, Zach. It sounds like you are one of the only young people I know who actually watched the State of the Union instead of scrolling past it four times on TikTok. What are your thoughts?
It's boring, but, and it could be 60% shorter if they would just stop clapping after, like, every sentence or booing after every sentence.
I wish they would start with, please save all reactions until the end, or just, like, give everybody, like, an LED or a neon sign where they, like, flip it, yay, flip it, boo, like, something like that. That would be so much better.
Yeah, but it was basically an hour or so of campaign speech for Biden, just talking about the stuff he wants to do. Because the bar is set so low for him by Republicans, like, I think Republicans ran an ad earlier in the day. It was just basically like, Biden's useless. He is a walking corpse. And he came out there and did a good job talking and didn't mess up too much. So it doesn't matter what he says. It's just like he says it and doesn't, like, completely just, like, go out, like, walk away like an old person.
I was about to say, walk off stage, try to shake the hand of somebody who's not there. It's like, wow, he acted like he was lucid. It was such a good speech. Like, oh dear. Like, yes. That is a really low bar.
So the Republicans need to focus more on the policies and less on him just being old, and, like, maybe do some contrast in their differences there. And I also did not enjoy the response by Katie Britt, the senator from Alabama.
Yeah, I like read through the cliff notes of that, and I was like, man, you could tell that they really tried to make this, like, her time to shine as, like, a younger conservative, and, like, it just kind of, like, I just didn't think a whole lot of it.
It was kind of annoying to watch, because she was just, like, on the verge of tears the entire time, and was, like, basically, like, he is the devil. And I'm like, can we discuss some policy differences a little bit?
Yeah, could we, like, maybe pull a stat in here? Yeah, he's evil, and he's old, and did we mention he's evil? Like, relax. Like, most politicians these days are.
Policy. That's all I want to see, some policies. Yeah,
well, and, I mean, you know, I joked about this with some friends back in 2016, 2017, but it really has rung true. I had a friend who was like, do you want to know why Trump got elected? And we were like, why? And he was like, name three of Trump's policies. And we were like, the wall, China, taxes, like, and, like, name three or four. And he was like, name one of Hillary's policies. And we were like, and he was like, that's exactly why. He was like, and nowadays we've fallen into the trap of, like, what's your policy? Not being that guy. Like, okay, but, like, what are you going to do as somebody who's not that guy? Like, what do you plan on? Oh, well, I'm just not that guy. Oh, okay. Well, because his policy is not being this guy. So, like, can I get some tangible platform, please?
I'm almost to the point of being like, forget the debates. Give me an hour-long PowerPoint presentation on your policies and what your plan is.
Yeah, like, and if you...
Let's get some facts in there.
Yeah, if you can't do that and there's not at least 10 citations, you are not eligible to run for president.
APA citations.
I want APA citations, and I don't want it to be a regular mainstream media source. I want to see an academic article. I want to see some Pew research. I want to see something. On to more concrete news. You've probably noticed, if you follow environmental news at all, that Canada has been in the climate news for the last few months because of the ups and downs with their carbon price. So it seems like for many Canadian conservatives, the carbon tax was implemented in a rather partisan way, and a lot of these conservative Canadians are really upset with Trudeau during times of economic hardship, because for him, he represents a lot of the liberal free spending and wheeling and dealing, and when they were like, okay, what's one thing that we got to do to axe that shows that we don't like Trudeau? Ah, carbon price. Let's go straight for the carbon price. So it seems like it wasn't implemented very well, and a lot of the proponents for a carbon price just kind of rolled over, and they're like, whatever it takes to stay in power. So that's kind of been the TLDR that I've gathered. Zach, have you seen it all? Some of the stuff going on with Canada and the carbon price and the economy and...
I think it's just been an easy policy to grind an axe against, and it's become
exactly what I was going to say.
The opposing conservative party's leader for the person they plan to run for prime minister has basically started a slogan called "Axe the Tax" and is coming out fully against it, and is using it as like the biggest way to differentiate himself from Trudeau, because Canadian conservatives aren't nearly as conservative as American conservatives.
Yeah,
they're slightly more conservative than European conservatives.
Yeah, fun things to know. Well, on the spectrum of conservatives, folks, we've got a lot of folks beat. So it's essentially just become this like ad hominem attack on Trudeau to hate the carbon price, and because it was implemented in a bipartisan way, it's fun to dunk on for a lot of Canadian conservatives. And the strange thing is, this carbon price has actually like had some level of success in the past. I'm talking like Canadian citizens actually getting their check for the fee being redistributed in the form of a dividend. But if you're sitting here right now wondering, what the heck are we talking about? We're going to break down what exactly a carbon price is, some of the other market levers for regulating carbon emissions, some of the ones that are great, some of the ones that are not so great, and why we need to start referring to a carbon price as a carbon fee and not a carbon tax. Wow, that was like the gong sound in the background. I feel like...
Sorry, Katie.
I feel acknowledged. Wow. It's, you know what it is? It's carbon pricing time.
We'll start getting introduced to sound effects to the show.
Yeah. I'm going to need like a whole drummer that we keep on standby for the show to like cue us up every time we have a topic change. Excellent. Zach, you're on the keyboard. Congratulations. You're our new drummer. You might be wondering, what is carbon pricing? So let me break it down. Fossil fuels, such as oil, natural gas, coal, they all contain carbon. And when they're burned, usually during like manufacturing and production, these fossil fuels release really potent greenhouse gases and carbon dioxide into the atmosphere that have a really negative impact on the ozone layer and on the general air pollution around you, the quality of life around you in turn. So a carbon price, whether it's designed as a fee or a tax, and you'll hear people kind of interchange those terms, puts an extra dollar amount on these fossil fuels and their carbon pollution. So a carbon price uses the market to incentivize businesses and people to switch to clean energy services and products. Placing a price on carbon involves putting a fee on these fossil fuels and carbon pollution in general. So the carbon pricing fee is based on the metric tons of carbon dioxide the fuel would generate, and it would be assessed at the earliest point of its entry into the economy. So as close as possible to the well or the mine or the port or wherever it's being, you know, introduced. This carbon price flows through the economy and it incentivizes businesses and people to switch to clean energy instead of dirty energy. And a carbon fee and dividend is more secure than a cap and trade system. So Zach, I know that you've been involved in the environmental movement for some time, and you've worked with a host of organizations that have had all sorts of economic levers that they propose. What do you know about a carbon price? What's your experience with a carbon price or your understanding of carbon price?
So from my experience, the carbon price is preferred by more conservative leaning environmentalists who view it as like just a single way to set a market and be consistent. It's like so many other policies, it's like we're funding through government funding, we're trying to supplement and just push clean energy. And this is a way of like putting a downward pressure on the fossil fuel market and pushing companies to other methods of reducing their emissions. These companies can choose pathways to reduce their emissions and aren't like be held to like go one direction. It's not like government directed. It's, we're going to put pressure on you economically and you have to figure out how you're going to deal with it your own way. And each organization, a company can deal with this pressure in their own way, and whoever figures it out best will do best.
And for any fan of the free market, that's good news, because that means, you know, minimal regulations, letting innovation and capitalism drive its own improvement without, you know, a lot of red tape involved, as you would see in some of those other policies. For example, one of those other policies that is just so fraught with errors, it's a wonder anybody still even believes in it, is cap and trade. And not only does cap and trade require an additional layer of bureaucracy in order to implement and run it, but it also creates a lot of price volatility that's difficult for businesses to keep up with. And unfortunately, believe it or not, I hope that if you're listening to this show, you've lost some of your naivete since you started listening with us. Believe it or not, a lot of big businesses are bad. They're run by not that nice people. So additionally, a lot of the cap and trade system is abused by polluters who find loopholes and either write off some of their things that they're doing as clean, or they own multiple entities that they'll trade carbon credits back and forth with. It's very hard to verify some of the information that a lot of businesses enter in order to get cap and trade benefits, and it's just really fraught with exploitation. So not really the choice for a lot of folks who are, I guess, care about the greater good. if you're business savvy and you want to make as much profit as possible, you probably love a cap and trade. But if you can see through the loopholes and you want to stop some of those polluters' loopholes, you're not going to be a big fan of cap and trade. Fortunately, a carbon fee and dividend is more secure than that. So, Zach, I saw that you made a note here about Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative cap and trade. Would you tell me a little bit more about that?
So that's a conglomerate of, I want to say, 12 states in the Northeast, from like New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, it's like down to, I think it's down to Virginia now. They are working as like a conglomerate using cap and trade to reduce their emissions.
Mm-hmm.
It has been effective, but one of the issues is, like you said, it adds in bureaucracy. It allows companies to sort of shift where emissions are coming from. So it's like someone doesn't want to do anything can really just buy all the credits and just keep polluting.
Right.
It's been less effective, I believe, because the market is generally favoring renewables already, as they have a cheaper, levelized cost of energy compared to a lot of sources of fossil fuels already. This just sort of lets the fossil fuels stay in the market and doesn't take full advantage of the cost competitiveness of renewables. What's funny is they've had to do like a major correction down, I think in like 2014. They're like, wow, we're blowing past our targets and we have to lower it even more. It's like they're setting very small targets. It's charged at like the electricity producer level or the direct polluter level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
interesting.
Spread around, but cap and trade isn't quite as effective as a carbon fee and dividend. It's a lot more business oriented and is a lot more bureaucratic and harder to really judge and see how effective it's being.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as dynamic and fluid as like a carbon fee and dividend is. There's constant pressure to just keep going down, whereas the cap and trade, it's like, oh, we're going to be below the limit for a couple of years. We can just trade our extra emissions that we have and give them to someone else.
Mm-hmm. And I know that California has been trying cap and trade since like 2006. If you heard me tip-tapping on my keyboard in the background, you're welcome for the ASMR. Secondly, it was because I was looking up how long California has been throwing whatever at the wall to see what sticks with cap and trade. It's apparently been since 2006. And I've read some reports in the past that showed essentially a lot of the same problems that we had mentioned here a few minutes ago. I've read, you know, if you've got a company that does really, really well and they have a bunch of leftover credits at the end of their fiscal year because they did a really, really good job, well, a company is still going to look for profit even if they're doing things honestly. And when you've got a large polluting company, pardon me, that doesn't really seem to care about changing their act in terms of pollution, they'll buy up those leftover credits from other companies. Your company that did things right in the first place, okay, they can still hit their certain allotment for the next year and they made money off of it. And then you've got the business who did absolutely nothing to change anything, but because they had a whole lot of money and other people did the right thing, hooray, they're looped in and they don't get a punishment. So it's just, it's a problem because people have found a way to exploit it and almost monopolize it. So I think that it's better, like you mentioned, Zach, it's really interesting that you mentioned, you know, a states versus businesses idea. Because I think, you know, if you're looking at a state, I don't think they're going to try to screw over or be shady with a conglomerate of other states, because that can be really quick to have, I think, political and bureaucratic ramifications when you've got a conglomerate of states like that in a certain region. So that seems more like a no-brainer than just kind of having businesses go willy-nilly. Because turns out, if you don't care about throwing your car battery in the ocean in the first place, you probably don't care about the legal parameters either of it.
I think a cap and trade is better than nothing, but I think it is not as good as a carbon fee and dividend.
Yeah, if you got to put all your eggs in one basket for reducing carbon emissions, you probably want to put it in the most effective and easiest to implement basket, and that would not be cap and trade. Just because it says, oh man, we hate this red tape. What if we threw in a little more red tape? it just won't work. So I personally am not a big fan of cap and trade. If you feel vehemently very much in favor of cap and trade, tweet at us and let us know your argument. I'd love to hear a conservative argument in favor of cap and trade that acknowledges shady business people. Okay, you're not going to get away with the free market hoopla in my house without talking about, oh, well, some people are going to abuse it, because they will. Unfortunately, a carbon price accounts for that.
I would also like to insert the foreign trade aspect of this, whereas like cap and trade, like if you're doing this all internally, how do you incorporate the additional emissions from out of country polluters?
Yeah, that's true.
If you're doing a carbon fee, you can apply that fee at the border when the products come in and be like, oh, we are cleaner and more environmentally friendly than you are. We're going to put a fee on your product to match what it would have been under our system. Much easier than it is on the cap and trade.
Carbon border adjustment mechanisms, which is what Zach is talking about, are very popular among the conservative community because it's like an additional layer of that economic feasibility of carbon emissions reduction, in that you more or less get to put another country in check.
China. India.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What a funny cough, Zach. First our farmland, now our CBAMs. But for anybody who might not be as deep in the environmental sector as some of us are here on the show, we've started seeing in recent years with the implementation of the EU's CBAM, and Russia and China are exploring these avenues as well. Essentially, they can penalize us during trades if we don't have a carbon price, aren't doing anything to lower our carbon emissions. I apologize for the screaming kid in the background. But having a CBAM and a carbon price, you know, that is the origin of the CBAM, allows us to protect ourselves in international trade with other countries and even punish countries that aren't doing anything on our level to reduce carbon emissions. So it's got the additional international layer, whereas the cap and trade system's response to that is just kind of shrug. So it seems like cap and trade is fine for regional areas, a conglomerate of states domestically, but it really starts to crumple when that volatility has to account for everybody else. So again, I'm team carbon price. So a little bit more info on a carbon fee before I move into this next part, which might make your head spin a little bit harder. So this, consider this the foundational building block of where I'm about to go with this episode. So a carbon fee puts a steadily rising fee on carbon-emitting fuels at the source where they're first introduced into the economy. So that requires far less administrative red tape than cap-and-trade system, and it gives a lot of businesses clarity right from the jump so that they can plan to transition to cleaner options throughout time. The money raised from this fee can be returned directly to households of American citizens in the form of a monthly dividend check. So, to be clear, the government does not keep any of the money raised from the fee. So by definition, a fee is a payment in exchange for a service or privilege and is commonly used to describe a policy that does not grow the size of the government. And this really here is the crux of why conservatives love it as much as they do. This makes carbon pricing policy a no-brainer for conservatives, who are very often opposed to the implementation of a tax, who value smaller governments, who aren't fans of red tape and administrative delays. This dividend would go to, I believe it was all American U.S. citizen households, and I think the priority is on low-income households first and then works their way up. Don't quote me on that, though.
Katie, so the plan is generally to distribute it evenly, because once you start trying to break it down by tax bracket, it becomes like very onerous. You need to put a lot of money into that, getting accountants and stuff to figure that out. But when you do that, 70% of households will earn more money than the cost will increase on them. So only like the top 30% of houses will see increased costs from this fee. And that'll be like people who are running businesses and running more like conglomerates. Shipping businesses will probably be a hit. Hard, but
so it sounds like you'll get more than you'll lose ultimately
for the 70% people.
Yeah, well, those are the ones we care about. Just kidding. Or am I? Zach, it looks like you've got some stats here. We'll call them Zach's Facts about the car. Very cute name, by the way, Zach. I would love to take credit for that, but Zach has put that in the document here. So we've got Hannah Rogers Neighborhood, and we've got Zach's Facts. Zach, hit us with some facts about carbon pricing.
Over 20 years, it's estimated to create 2.8 million jobs and grow the GDP by 1.375 trillion while reducing emissions by more than 50%. So this is a request for information act from the United States House of Representatives Select Committee on the Climate Crisis. So it's from Congress. People, scientists reporting to Congress.
All right, we'll take it.
From another scientific study from the Climate Leadership Council, if the carbon fee was set at $40 per ton, with like 5% on top of inflation added every year, it would reduce emissions by half in 15 years and provide $2,000 a year to families.
Oh, wow.
The Carbon Fee Dividend Act has been supported by 3,500 economists, including 27 Nobel laureates who have signed on to Carbon Fee Dividend. If you look at young Republicans in particular, 3/4 of Republicans under 40 support a Carbon Fee Dividend.
Hooray, I'm a statistic. Hooray!
I'm not sure what the support is on the left side. I've had pushback from people on the left more for the Carbon Fee Dividend Act, and they want different policies. But I feel like this is a good compromise position for conservatives who want to take a step and be leaders in the field of the environment. And we can put our hat in the ring and be like, this is our environmental policy. Will you guys meet us this much and give us a solution that we can all agree on?
And I will just share some of the pushback criticisms that I've heard from folks on the left, and that it doesn't distribute the dividend to anybody who's undocumented or to anybody who cannot verify U.S. citizenship. And it largely leaves indigenous populations out of the equation. It's hard to verify where indigenous groups fall in the collection and distribution of the fee and dividend. So those are a lot of the complaints that I typically hear from left-leaning groups. So I think ultimately my verdict on that is I think it's worth starting somewhere and then working towards something that you feel more comfortable with, as opposed to not doing anything at all and then wondering why things are the way they are.
Yeah.
So that is my take.
Yeah. To people on the left, I would say this is a very progressive policy, very progressive economic policy, because it puts the highest pressure on the highest earners. So people who are running multi-billion dollar businesses will see the most impact on their bottom dollar. And since it's a flat rate supply to every U.S. Citizen, people on the lowest end of the income spectrum will get the biggest impact on their financial well-being. Because if we're all getting the same amount, the people who earn the less will benefit the most and see the most income increase.
Absolutely. And I've often told folks on the left, it's not going to get much better than this in terms of getting support from conservatives on a climate change policy. I mean, this is kind of the cream of the crop for conservatives. So again, something for me is always better than nothing. That is the kit and caboodle. So this is where I put on my Hermione Granger hat, or maybe my cloak and my wand, and I go, it's a carbon fee, not a carbon tax. And this was the big thing that I've always complained about, because all great. The write-ups, thank you. It's a carbon fee, not a carbon tax. So this has always been a big gripe of mine, that we would do all this work to get ready to talk about a carbon fee and dividend, and we would go into meetings with our members of Congress who were on the right, and they would say, I'm not voting for a tax. I'm like, well, it's not like a tax. And I'd be like, it says carbon tax. I'm not voting for it. And I was like, okay, all right. Hence the reason for this episode. Technically speaking, a tax has the primary purpose of raising revenue, usually for the government to use as they wish. If the government imposes a carbon tax, it is implied that Congress would use the revenue from the tax for something that is potentially not even related to climate. Therefore, this is not a tax. This is not a carbon tax. Stop calling it a carbon tax. that turns off everybody on the right as soon as you say it, and this policy is too good to be shot down because of the nuances of a singular word. A carbon fee, however, is where the revenue does not go to the government, but instead is returned to the American people in the form of a dividend. That is why this is a carbon fee, not a carbon tax. So, additionally, while many businesses and individuals tend to pay compulsory taxes as a result of owning things and making purchases, which are actions that tend to be unavoidable, a fee is accrued as a result of going out of one's way to do something wrong. So in this case, a fee is issued as a result of companies that are choosing to pollute when non-polluting alternatives are available instead, and even incentivized, I would say, far more than literally breaking the law.
Yeah, 100% green. You don't pay anything. Like
that's what I'm saying. Like, there are so many incentives out right now, especially with the passage of the climate provisions in the IRA, which let me just be the first to say, I'm not a big fan of the price tag involved with the Inflation Reduction Act from, I think, 2022. That's like Biden's hallmark policy. Not a big fan of how expensive it was. However, it's all said and done. The incentive and the money is there now. Might as well take advantage of that. I mean, you can't go back in time. Might as well take advantage of the incentives that are there. There is more incentive, I think, for businesses to go green these days than to continue to throw their car batteries in the ocean and spill oil and just go willy-nilly with it. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we've always talked about conservatives being the group that likes to uphold justice. We're hard on people who do the wrong thing. We're, you know, the law enforcement supporters. We're all those good things. It is nonsensical to say that you are all of these things as a conservative and then say, man, I hate when we punish people who are doing the wrong thing by imposing a fee on them for breaking the law. How dare we do that? Dude, that is just so, there is no way, that is non sequitur. That is not at all conducive to a conservative attitude, or even a pro-law enforcement attitude or a pro-criminal justice attitude. You get a speeding ticket when you break the law. You should get a carbon fee when you pull it, period.
Yeah, and from someone who's more of a fiscal conservative, and that's where I focus on, the key term is revenue neutral. We're not giving any money to the government, and all the money is being returned back to the citizenry.
Absolutely. Amen. So, George P. Schultz, who served as Secretary of State under President Ronald Reagan, and who was also Secretary of the Treasury and Labor under President Nixon, really laid out a conservative case in support of the carbon fee and dividend in an op-ed that he wrote in 2017, and I pulled a part of that op-ed here. He says, the carbon dividend strategy has four interrelated elements that account for its strength. A gradually rising and revenue-neutral carbon tax. I hate that word, carbon tax. Carbon dividend payments made equally to all Americans to be funded using all the carbon tax revenue, rollback of costly command and control regulations that were implemented because the environmental costs of carbon fuels have not been incorporated into their price, and border adjustment to ensure a level playing field and U.S. competitiveness, he wrote. So that's all the things that Zach and I talked about here a few minutes ago. So Schultz went on to write that the revenue gained from a carbon fee should not be earmarked for any form of government spending or for the reduction of other taxes. Rather, it should be rebated as a monthly dividend equally to all Americans, end quote. So carbon fee and dividend, out of all of these options, not only limits pollution, but it also punishes polluters, it helps businesses and the economy, and it helps Americans who need it the most, while also creating a level playing field and security for Americans to trade with other countries.
Yeah, and if you ever have used a model to simulate policies, environmental policies, and how they impact the economy and the government and pollution, the carbon fee is one of the most effective things you can do. And once you have this fee implemented, you could really just cut down on a lot of other different policies and reduce the bureaucracy. And this could be the only thing we have for the environment, and it'll be super effective at reducing pollution and emissions.
I have read studies that have said a carbon price alone would do the work of like three or four other policies at the same time. So if you can manage to do a carbon price, almost everything else you throw on top of that is just like an added bonus. So it really is, in my opinion, a no-nonsense, no-brainer policy the folks on the left and right should be in support of. And quite frankly, I think it's the only way for us to really reduce carbon emissions in a way that doesn't punish Americans who need the most help and are the most vulnerable in the process.
All right, let's give Trump's campaign a call. Get him on it.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, I'm going to be calling him every single day to let them know, hey, you guys need to get on this. And speaking of action steps, what an incredible segue, Zach. Write your member of Congress and let them know you're a young conservative who supports a carbon price. Get ready, because I'm going to tell you how to do that. You can go to house.gov and enter your zip code to find your member of Congress in the House of Representatives who represents your district, who you're a constituent of. Let him or her know that you support a carbon price as a young conservative. You can also do the same for your senators. Go to senate.gov and click Find Your Senators, then select your state to find your members of Congress in the Senate.
Yeah. And I would say always reach out to your members of Congress. Reach out to campaigners, presidential campaigns. Let them know that this is a policy you care about. If they're knocking on your door, let them know this is what you care about. And we'll see, hopefully that reaction builds up and can filter up to the top.
Make them earn that $177,000 a year salary that they get. Make them earn it. Yeah, and if you've got a strong argument for cap and trade system, I've literally never heard one from somebody on the right. So if you have a strong conservative argument that acknowledges some people are going to try to find loopholes for cap and trade, tweet us at GTP Radio Show and let us know what you think.
For you, our listener, email us with your thoughts. Our email is info@greenteapartyradio.com. Thank you for listening to Green Tea Party Radio, and a very special thank you to all our patrons. We couldn't do this without you. Your support is integral to us running this show. Amen. If you're interested in getting early access to episodes as well as Green Tea Party Radio merch, check us out at greenteapartyradio.com. If you have feedback, tell us what's on your mind and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
And just so you know, this is our passion project. We don't have any organizational sponsor, regardless of what some of your boomer parents want to think. We're not a George Soros funded, I don't know, trap, like sleeper cell. We're just a group of young conservatives who have important things to say about climate change. And this is just a reminder that Green Tea Party Radio is not representative of the Diocese of Little Rock, Catholic Climate Covenant, or any of our employers. And if you want to hear our show on your college radio station, email us at info@greenteapartyradio.com. That's info@greenteapartyradio.com. And give us the details about your campus and your radio station. Again, that email is info@greenteapartyradio.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And I'm hoping next week I won't give you misinformation about Charlotte the Stingray. I'm hoping we'll have a real update by then, and it won't be something that I, like, came up with in a hazy dream about her having 14 pups and me going, what the heck? And then going back to check it later and there being no pups and just, well, at least not
being
like,
sad.
Like, born. Yeah, yeah. And then being like, what the heck? And then wondering if I need to call my therapist because I hallucinated a stingray I've never met having babies. So I don't know what that means for the overall sanity of the show, but that's where we're at. It's after the spring forward time change, so I'm missing an hour of sleep, and that's what you get for it. Enjoy.
All right. Thanks for listening. Good episode, Katie. Thanks for writing it.
Thank you. You too, Zach.